Can't you see it? The world running on EVs and renewable energy? Here at Graybar, with years of renewables experience, we live in that world. Get in touch to see for yourself.
We're now ready to depart.
Book your visit at graybar.com. Yep, Graybar does that.
Whether you want to
buy, buy, buy
in a bear market or
sell, sell, sell
in a bull market, Jim Cramer can help you become a better investor. Mad Money, weeknights 6 Eastern. Listen to CNBC on the Odyssey app. It's Sal Capaccio.
Sal Capaccio. Sal Capaccio. Sal Capaccio. Sal Capaccio. Sal Capaccio. Sal Capaccio. Sal Capaccio.
On WGR.
I got a Happy New Year last night. We debated it. It was discussed.
Nice.
My daughter's hockey game.
Glad I wasn't.
January 9th.
Glad I wasn't within earshot of that.
He's like, what? Like, well, you know, we just, maybe it's a little late.
Yeah.
And he's like, well, I haven't seen you this since New Year's. And I felt like he was right. It was a polite, reasonable thing to say. Happy New Year. Maybe not. He's shaking. Sally's shaking his head.
Not in my opinion. No. You can just move on. Just, hey, how you been? I haven't seen you in a while. Fine. I don't need a Happy New Year.
You'd
on
rather,
January 9th.
How's your year going?
Right.
Maybe like that instead.
Are you keeping your resolutions?
Yeah.
Oh,
something.
Lord.
Some, you know, hidden reference. Not so hidden reference to it being a new year.
This is not something I've gotten cranky about as I've gotten older. I've always been this way.
Sal Capaccio on the West Her Hotline. Sal, you want to weigh in, or should we just get right to football?
I still probably said it when I shouldn't, you know. I mean, I guess according to whomever that is, Bulldog,
me,
whatever.
It's me, Sal. I am the arbiter of this.
Yeah, I found myself. I definitely found myself saying it to people, you know, probably within the past week, and then thinking, should I have said that? I don't really know. So it's all good. I think the intent is what matters to me.
You know, mm-hmm. you're now making.
Right.
I'm probably, I have tomorrow wide open. I'll probably go out for lunch and a couple of beers during the afternoon before the football. And I'll probably see people that I usually see but haven't seen since the holidays. And I think this might get taken out for a spin tomorrow with acquaintances. All I feel right. Like I'm in line for maybe some very late Happy New Year's tomorrow.
But that's it.
I'm not even going to. I may stay home because of it.
Now, there's a way around this. Instead of saying Happy New Year, you do the, hey, how you doing? Did you have a good New Year?
Yeah, again,
I think that's a good one.
That's right. That's right. The, the soft,
yes,
soft sell.
Side door.
I'm not sure that's right. Okay. Sal, my friend Pat Doherty, Roto Pat, put it this way on the Bills as they embark on their playoff season here, so to speak. Quote, there's not much to say other than the Bills finally have to do the damn thing this year. That's about right, isn't it? And, you know, by the way, Baltimore, too. We're comparing these two teams who might have a showdown between them next week all the time. That's where we're at. You just have to win now.
Yep, I agree. And I probably did not have that sentiment back in August because there were some changes. And I always felt whenever anybody would bring me on a radio station or whatever around the country, they'd ask me about the Bills and it looks like they're going to be a different team. And is this a step back year? My answer was always the same, which was, listen, as long as you have Josh Allen, you have a chance, right? Like they're going to try and win because they have Josh Allen. They're not, you know, taking a step back and thinking this is going to be a year where they're not going to compete. But it's probably, to me, a little bit too much to ask to be kind of the same level team and back in that mix. Okay, let's fast forward 4 months. Here they are. They've won 13 games. They're the number two seed. You got to do the damn thing, right? I mean, that's just the way it is. I mean, now you're here, and you've shown that, yep, despite the changes, you're still really good. And now we go back to past playoff failures, having this team and this quarterback that haven't been able to get to where they ultimately could have, should have, needed to go. And now you have another look at it. And the field, as much as it might be difficult in certain matchups, is still one in which you can still win these games.
Yeah. How much of a feel, if at all, do you have for how Sean McDermott, Josh Allen, I don't know, any other player you'd care to mention here, is sort of processing that? I mean, you're always trying to win. You're always expected to win. You're one of the favorites. You know, you're at home here for at least a couple of weeks if you can keep winning. But it does feel more like that sentiment that Mike's friend mentioned there. And I wonder if at all, those men I mentioned or anyone else you want to throw into the mix here, Sal, are of that and how they're handling it.
I think that we probably didn't give enough credit to or credence to them when they would say and tell us at the beginning of the year that, like, hey, like, we're still going to be really good and we're going to be competing. And, you know, those things sound good and teams say those things all the time. I think they have had that belief all year. I really do. Mm-hmm. And I think that they know they're here and they're very good and they have a look at it. I think the belief in the locker room, the belief inside the building is that they're the best team in the AFC with the best quarterback and they have an opportunity here. But they also know, and this I think gets lost in all these conversations all the time doing this for a living, which is this is professional sports. Everybody's really good. All it takes is a couple bad plays, one bad day, and your season ends. And then you start to hand-wring and blame, and you got to fire this person or that person, and they were never good enough. They could never do it. And that's not always the case. And you know me, I don't subscribe to that. I just think that it could take one bad day, a couple of bad plays, like I said. So, but I think that they believe that, you know, they're good enough to do this, and they're not just here by, hey, we're here, let's go, nobody expected us. This has been what we've been working for and think we could do all year.
I am getting a vibe. I saw, we talked to Tyler Dunn on Monday. He had a piece that I think dropped last weekend that was very in-depth. He sat down with McDermott for a long chat, and Tyler does excellent work. Joe Biscaglia, our old buddy from here that has been at The Athletic for a few years, did a similar themed piece. And both pieces, I feel like I'm getting this vibe from McDermott, and I'm remembering talking to Chris Drury during the Sabres first long playoff run. Just prepare. Know your conscience is clean. You did the work. You're as ready as you can be. You're not shortcutting anything. You're living right. You're doing all the right things, and you just got to live with the result. And that can make you not feel nervous. So you just, I've got peace of mind. I know I'm as ready for this as I can be, and we're just going to go, you know, let the chips fall. And I think that's a very healthy approach to have. I don't know if it guarantees you anything. Of course it doesn't. But I think that the thing is predicated on taking the right steps to get to here. And I like that methodology.
Right. So the thing that I've always said about Sean McDermott teams is that they're very consistent. I remember the 2017 breaking the drought year. And this is a specific memory of mine, that when they got to the end of the year and they went into the playoffs, and I was asked by people on radio stations, like, okay, it must be like, oh my God, the relief. And, you know, are they just going crazy? How are they handling it? And I said, you know, I thought the whole year, I'm like, you know, they've had ups and downs this year, and they got blown out by New Orleans and had this Peterman thing and all that. Like, it was, I said, at the end of the day, like, they kind of didn't waver. They were just consistent. And it really kind of struck me that that's just how he's approached it. And I just think that that's been the same approach here. But going back to the Tyler Dunn piece and what Joe wrote and my own observations, I do think McDermott's been a little bit different this year. I do think that it feels like, and he has admitted this in some of these pieces, and he's said basically, like, he's kind of understood that, you know, he's the head coach, but he doesn't have to be a micromanager in whatever way he want to phrase that. That's kind of the way he's phrased it. And I do feel that he's loosened up a bit. He's doing snow angels with Josh Allen, right? I've seen that myself, just in my own conversations with him, on the record, off the record, one-on-one. I get that sense, and I think that goes to what you're saying here, which is, look, there's only so much I can do. We're good. I'm going to put my staff and team in the best position possible, and then we're going to go play football. And another thing I remember is back in 2017 and 2018, right around that area, when McDermott was hired, I remember someone saying to me, because he was so on top of things and had his thumb on every little detail, as you guys know, that's just kind of what he does. He's on top of everything. And someone said, you know, I just hope that he can see the forest through the trees. This is all great, but when it comes time for, you know, big decisions and moments, like, you can't be too much like that. You have to let them play. You have to kind of trust what you use his own term, trust the process, right? And I do think that over the years, that could probably be why the team has not maybe performed well in some critical moments. I think that changing a bit of the roster might also play into how things could change this year, which is you had a group that was so incredibly bonded by breaking the drought and all this kind of stuff. But then you had a group for the last few years that was so, you know, unfortunately incredibly bonded by 13 seconds and all the failures. there's been a bit of a turnover here. So I do think there's a bit of a different mindset from that aspect, if that all makes sense.
I like that point. You know, also I would say to this in terms of Allen, this is maybe along the lines of what you guys are saying, especially at Bulldog here, about an athlete in a pressure situation, how they're usually probably way different than we would be. Like, we're maybe way more nervous for this game than than the Bills. Mm-hmm. And with Allen, like, what an opportunity he has. This is like for miracle. Great moments are born in great opportunities, or whatever the line is. That's how I would expect Allen to be about this game. I bet this whole thing puts a smile on his face. You know, just this is my chance. I have another chance. How he really talks at press conferences. It's believable. Like, this is my chance to prove, you know, about myself and this team and win for the city and all those things. I think a guy like that usually would turn this into a positive.
Yeah, 100%. I agree. And just knowing Josh and his personality, I think that's right for him. And Josh has performed well in the playoffs, right? We all know that. He has really good playoff numbers. Has it always been perfect? No. There's a couple games that, you know, aren't the most even for him. He has the lowest interception rate of all time for any quarterback who started like 10 games or something like that. You know, I have a theory, Mike. I've always subscribed to this theory. I don't know if it's right, but I think this kind of piggybacks on what you're saying here. You know, we've always seen guys like Derek Jeter, Michael Jordan, Tom Brady, who they've always just performed the biggest on the biggest of stage and the best. And there's an old saying people would say always, like, oh, they rise to the occasion. No. I've never believed that. What I've always believed is the other people around them don't stay at the same level. They stay at the same level. They're always great. It doesn't matter the situation, but it takes a special person to do that because everybody else that they're playing with or competing with, they kind of do wilt a little bit in that pressure situation. And I view Josh as one of those people who, look at his primetime numbers, look at his national TV numbers. I think Josh is always at the same level regardless.
The Barnes Firm injury report. The Barnes Firm. Injured? For help, call 1-800-8-MILLION. Not a lot here. We've had Brandon Codrington this week. What's the latest with him and anyone else?
Yeah, he is questionable to play in this game. He did practice yesterday, as we talked about, on a limited basis. Excuse me, he was questionable today. I'm sorry, he was limited today as well. He is listed as questionable for the game. We'll see where that goes. We've talked about some options the Bills might have. And like I said to you guys, I think you could take this up to game time, really. I would not be surprised. I don't know if this will happen. I wouldn't be surprised if they elevate KJ Hamler tomorrow. Now, if they do that, it doesn't mean automatically that Brandon Codrington is out of the game. And if they don't do that, it doesn't automatically mean that Brandon Codrington is in the game. But the reason you would do it possibly is they could take this up until Sunday morning, get him waking up, get out of his bed and see how he feels. So you need to have an option just at least, you know, in your back pocket if that's not going to be. I would think it first would be Khalil Shakir, but you'd have to have somebody else available, I think, for that. So I wouldn't be surprised if they do that, considering the rest of the injury report is completely clean. This is the healthiest this team has been going into the playoffs in this era, and it's also as healthy as any team, I think, in the NFL is going into the playoffs. Jamarcus Ingram was back with the team today, and he was out for 2 days for personal reasons, and Sean McDermott revealed on the Extra Point Show with me today, it's because Jamarcus welcomed a child into the world. So that's awesome news for him, obviously. Congratulations. The only other team that might be as healthy as the Bills, honestly, guys, is the team they're playing. Because the Denver Broncos, they have a pretty clean injury report as well.
Yeah. KJ Hamler revenge game.
Yeah, right. Yeah. They got, and those call-ups from the practice squad are Saturday at 4 o'clock. That's the deadline?
Yeah, they
got
to be done by tomorrow at 4 p.m. Right. Because it's a Sunday game. And honestly, like, I was just kind of going through. Now, remember, you still only get two, but there's no limit on the number of times each person can come up. So all the things that happened in the regular season are now reset. Okay. So you could elevate Tyrell Shavers or Jalen Virgil, even though they have three already each. It doesn't matter. KJ Hamler. So to me, because you have a healthy roster, I'm looking at probably KJ Hamler. If they do this, it'll be KJ Hamler because you might need an extra guy ready to for some returns. And maybe they go with Casey Tuhill because, you know, you want the experience at defensive end. It's a position you like to rotate. And I don't just see a lot of other options elsewhere.
Can't you see, sorry to word it this way, can't you see the All-Pro stuff after the Pro Bowl team really like lighting a fire? under the Bills. Just nobody, two Pro Bowlers, mm-hmm. nobody, one second team All-Pro in Allen, Jackson first mm-hmm. team, all of that. They might take that pretty personally.
They will absolutely take it personally and at least lean into trying to use that as motivation. Now, whether it is or it isn't is always up for debate, right? I mean, you could say, like, because listen, you could use that and have the greatest Kyle Williams pregame speech and all of that, and then if the Denver Broncos go down the field and score a touchdown on the first drive of the game, it's kind of thrown out the window. I mean, once the game starts, it doesn't matter as much, but you try to get any edge you can, especially when you're a close to 10-point favorite and everybody's just saying, hey, this team's coming in, they got nothing to lose, and they want to beat you. You're going to have to try to find a way to have that edge about you because you don't have the edge of being an underdog. I'm so confident in telling you guys that they will do this. Did you see the Buffalo Bills' own Twitter account today? The Bills' Twitter account tweeted out a tweet that says, zero Buffalo Bills have been voted as first team AP All-Pro. And there is a meme, Josh Allen, a video of him going, okay.
Okay. Yeah.
When he answered a question, I believe it might have been
Jerry.
Well, one of the media members, Jerry Sullivan, maybe.
Jerry
when he said, I don't think this team, I don't think this team is good enough to win a Super Bowl or something like that.
Right.
And this was Josh's response back a few years ago. The Bills themselves have used this on social media.
I want to ask you about something I saw on social media, but I did not hear you say, but social media told me that you said it. So if it's wrong, please just squash this right away. But something about airlines adding flights from Denver because there were tickets available. And, like, how worried are should we be? Did you say something like that? Is this true? Should we be worried about, like, an orange wave takeover?
Ooh.
What I wrote was, two things. I wrote that the Denver Broncos are coming in here tonight for a Sunday game.
That I knew.
Okay. That is one thing. However, what I did say on the radio was, I also saw and read that United Airlines has added a flight from Denver to Buffalo for this game. I said nothing about tickets being available.
Okay. All right.
I have no idea how these people are getting tickets to the game.
Okay.
So all I'm saying is there are Denver Broncos fans coming to Buffalo. However, they get tickets for the game. I have no idea. I don't know what's available, what's not. I didn't look into that. But I did see United Airlines has added a flight from Denver to Buffalo.
Okay.
You got me with Orange Wave.
You like that?
Orange Wave. Yes, I do. All right. One thought here. I feel like we've talked about this a lot in our last two days, but just the matchup here, Sal, one more time. What's tricky about it for the Bills? What a couple of things maybe.
Well, I've said all week that a way for the Denver Broncos to win this game, their path to victory is making big plays on defense. I think they'll try to do that. They'll be aggressive. They'll blitz. They like to blitz a lot. They have a fantastic defensive front. They lead the league in sacks. They lead the league in sacks per pass attempt. And I think they'll be looking to take the ball away. They'll be looking to rake it out of James Cook's hands like they did last year in the first play of the game. They'll be looking for a mistake by Josh Allen. They'll be looking for a strip sack. To me, that's what concerns you, is don't give them that. Don't give them an opportunity. And then the other thing that concerns me a lot is Marvin Mims. And look, the Bills can have some control over that, right? You can decide and figure out how you want to handle him in the return game. And, that's Sam Martin. But you still have to do it. You still have to execute it. They'll have a plan for that. There's no doubt about it. But he's still really fantastic at what he does. And these are the top two teams in the entire NFL when it comes to starting field position. A lot of that for the Bills is the turnovers that they get. A lot of that for the Broncos is how good their defense is and how good their return man is.
Yeah. I might guess that Sam Martin will be punting toward a sideline and sacrifice yardage for returnability.
I wouldn't doubt it, Bulldog. I just think that's probably, the smarter option here for the Bills. If you look into some deep drive stats, I like to do this stuff sometimes, just kind of looking at comparing these kinds of things, just some interesting analytics stuff. The Bills and the Broncos both, as I said, are number one and two in drive starts, like where they start. However, there is a huge difference from there, though. For the Broncos, their average number of yards per drive is 29, which is 23rd in the NFL. The Bills average 35 yards a drive, which is eighth in the NFL. So they're starting in a good spot, but they're not really driving the ball down the field that much. If you can start them not in a good spot, I really like your chances here.
Very good, Sal. Here we go. The playoffs. Enjoy it, and we'll talk next week.
You got it, guys. Have a great weekend, and we'll talk on Monday.
There you go. That's our Sal Capaccio on the Wester Hotline. His appearances are brought to you by New York's only outlet liquor. When you need to stock up, it's the place to buy a case. What's your outlet?
Bills are a healthy favorite. Just whenever the happened again early in that conversation, whenever the notion of a loss here is brought up, my mind goes right to, oh my God, this job next week if they lose. Like the first thing that comes to my mind is, oh, just it's been so smooth this year. Not even much of the McDermott stuff, your references to past game management blunders, if you want. There's almost been, what about this injury? Fine. Safeties, you know, just the Milano, fine.
Right.
Diggs, trade, fine. We didn't fixate on Diggs. Didn't fixate on Xavier Worthy. It's just been such a smooth ride. May it last. 803-0550. It is Football Friday on WGR. Mike Schopen, the Bulldog. We'll be back in a snap. Brought to you by Snapdragon Apples, the official apple of the Buffalo Bills.
Listen, this isn't a stat award. Everybody's got stats these days. Who's a contender for this? Jared Goff has stats. Joe Burrow has stats. Sam Darnold has stats. Obviously, all these players have stats. And in my top three this year, it'll be Josh Allen, Lamar Jackson, and Patrick Mahomes, period. Because you shouldn't make this an award about stats or who had the best statistical year. It's not the most outstanding player. It's the most valuable player.
Hmm. Peter King on the Ross Tucker Football Podcast, by the way.
All right.
You want to respond?
To what, that?
Yeah. You're probably pretty with that.
Yeah. Yeah, I think so. I think that's how it's been done for years. And so that all makes sense to me. I mean, Burrow would be the MVP if you were just looking at who had the best year. He had an incredible year. Better than Jackson and Allen. I don't even know that I think it's close.
Then why shouldn't he win?
Because the team wasn't that good, and so how valuable was your performance? The value of your performance is to elevate your team to, you know, being at least a playoff team. I mean, I don't even know. I mean, if the Bengals had gotten in with 10-7 or something, I still don't think I would want to give him the award. But he's the best player in the league this year by looking at the stats.
Best quarterback, at
least. Best quarterback, and so start picking that apart. You know, well, the team was terrible, so he was throwing more later in games. Allen's sitting with a baseball cap on for like 11 quarters this season. Joe Burrow didn't have that luxury because his team was terrible. So he piled up numbers. That's it. Like, that's not the most valuable player to me. It's the best player. He had the best year anyway, best season, but it's not the most valuable.
Because it was of no value ultimately.
Ultimately, like they're golfing.
It's just so inside out for me. I mean, I get it, of course, but it really just seems like a twisted exercise at that point to consider Mahomes more valuable than Burrow this year because the Chiefs won X number more games, whatever it would have been, five. Despite the fact, I mean, it's not, stats are just so easy to pick on. And I wouldn't necessarily, I mean, I watch the games too. If I had this vote, I would watch the games too and not just look at numbers, and maybe there would be sort of some different takeaways. And I think anything like that would help Allen. You know, Allen has had spectacular moments this year, a couple of all-time great games that actually also come with great stats, but just sort of the story of this season, he's been such a leading part of it, and Mahomes hasn't. But and Mahomes is obviously very valuable, so I'm not going all the way to scoff at that. It's just, it does seem twisted when we're finding ways in this argument he makes to not have this be an award that goes to the best player, like, or just best quarterback. There's that. I'm leaving all that out. I mean, what would Sam Monson say? Aaron Donald should have won five.
Sure.
Best player in the league. He should have won five times. But of course he didn't come close. We have different awards for you. It's a quarterback award.
Right.
It's not going to be Barkley here.
Right. This is part of the reason why I always dismiss the notion of Barkley, even if he broke the record. I think a fair question to ask yourself if you're a voter, or ask of a voter if you're not, and you happen to know one personally and get an answer out of this, is like, what does Philadelphia look like with some other running back who runs for 1,500 yards instead of 2,000? Are the results much different at all? Like, how valuable is that? I mean, it's transcendent, it's record-breaking, but where's the value? I would never vote for a running back. I think almost never. I mean, there's some scenario where a guy puts up 3,000 yards or something and another 1,000 receiving, and like maybe it's undeniable at that point. But, you know, setting the all-time rushing mark in a 17-game season now, this isn't really going to do a lot for me. Congratulations. You beat a guy who did it in 14 games or 16 games, like golf clap.
Which he didn't, ultimately.
Right, he didn't ultimately even get there.
I guess he beat OJ by 2 yards.
Right, that's why I just sort of put that, I never took that seriously. I didn't think he'd get there, first of all, which he didn't, because I thought what I thought would happen happened. They were solid, and we're not going to run him 20 times so we can get a record. We have playoff games to win. But even if he had, I don't think it would have, for me, I'm not pretending to know what goes on with the voters, you know, for Allen's sake, I hope enough voters are of the mind to award Jackson the AP first team because he's had an incredible year, and look at Allen and go, okay, we'll give Allen that one if it's the same pool of people. But I don't know that that'll happen. It has been a long time since it's happened that way. Where the first team all pro guy didn't get the MVP.
Yes. I'm not making an argument that I really love. It's just I'm straining it a little bit at this award not going to the best guy because of other if Allen or Jackson or Mahomes missed their seasons, who cares? Like, you know, the exercise seems to be in part trying to figure out what would happen if that happened. If these teams played without those guys for half the season, what would have happened in those games? You know, we don't know. So why bother, right? Like, they're probably all worse. They probably all lose. How good the backup is would play into that, too. How good the defense is, how good the coaching staff is would play into all that, too. But it gets pretty far into territory where you just can't know the answer. And a lot of this, too, is intangibles, right? Like, Allen seems to be aces when it comes to intangibles. Maybe so are the other guys. How do you know? And a guy like Peter King and the voters, you would think at least many of them who are around players a lot would have good ways of sensing that or get trusting answers to those questions that go beyond just the platitudes that your team's guy gets when you're speaking with the media. Like, everybody's, all the Bills guys are pumping Allen up. The Ravens guys are probably pumping Jackson up. I don't really know. So you'd want to be able to see through that. All right. Well, I'm getting to that point where I'm kind of exhausted.
Yeah.
I'm getting to that point.
Well, that could be good for me, too.
Why? You're done?
Well, because if you, whatever. I mean, if you want to talk about it, I'm not saying you rule the world here or anything, but, like, you know, I'm going to run with you. But if you start to get annoyed about it and change the subject, then that might work for me too. Okay. I mean, whatever. I'm equipped for anything.
I'll give you a new subject.
I just don't know that I can take 6 weeks of the semantics of valuable versus outstanding and all that. I don't know if I can do it. But the award is called the most valuable player. If you said it in a voice that invoked criticism. If you want to have the most outstanding player, go ahead and do that. They have that. Offensive player of the year. Quarterback of the year. I've suggested this midway through the year when we were all yelling about it with Sam and all these other guys. Do it like college. Have an outstanding player at every position. Put it on TV. Have Jimmy Kimmel hosted. Whatever. Do whatever you need to do.
Nikki Glaser.
Sure. Bring it on.
She's on a roll.
She is.
But Jeff Goldblum.
I don't need, oh boy. Why did you mention him? I didn't divulge who that, but booped up, back up.
I'll give you a new topic. So last night, I rabbit hole time.
Yeah.
I watched, so NFL Films has these excellent documentaries on former NFL drafts, like old NFL drafts. Mm-hmm. Have you ever seen any of those?
No, this isn't the 30 for 30 on the 83 draft. It's a different
not,
thing.
Okay. It's not, but they're somewhat similar.
Okay. I don't think I've taken any of that in.
Okay.
Am I in any of them?
Not that I've seen. But I watched.
Every now and then I get social media notes from people who catch me on some old NFL Films thing. Anyway, go ahead, sorry.
Yeah, countdown shows, right?
Yeah, like yeah.
Top 10.
Top 10, whatever. This guy, that guy. Yeah, top 10 quarterback receiver duos is one I remember doing.
1974, I watched. 1994, I think they had. Dan Wilkinson, I watched that one. And 2005, Aaron Rodgers.
Big Daddy Wilkinson.
Big Daddy Wilkinson, yeah. Who, by the way, had a pretty good career.
Yeah.
He just wasn't amazing.
A monster, right.
In 2005, which is the draft where Rodgers sits in the green room by himself for a long time, he looks so young in that stuff. But did you realize, this is a long time ago, 19 years ago, or 20, but did you know that three running backs went in the top five?
Oh, wow.
That year?
No.
Speaking of running back value,
but it's not. I don't think we'd had the memo yet on don't draft running backs high. Running backs don't matter. I don't think it had really gotten traction yet.
This was the peak or the nadir.
Holy cow! Three in the top five. Kajana Carter's the first name that just came to mind for me. Is that the wrong draft?
Yeah, that's older.
Okay,
that's like mid-90s maybe. 96, 95, 96, I want to say.
Yeah, you know what? In my head, for some reason, even though you just said 2005 and Aaron Rodgers, my brain heard 95.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
Well, that's a problem, but.
Yeah, that's bad. Okay, so 2005. Okay.
I would never.
Oh.
That's like really a tough era for me, remembering anything. I do remember Rodgers for that year. Like that connects for me. 05. That draft, but not the running back names.
I've got one name in my head, and then I went, I'm not even sure that that was a running back. So I might be about to be really bad at this.
Two played for the same college team.
Okay.
Let me tell you.
Tim Biakabatuka.
No.
Was he a running back at least?
He was a running back out of Michigan.
Okay. So I just got it in my head, and then for some reason I confused him with Julius Peppers, and then I got really tangled up.
So anyway, let me help you out.
Julius Peppers is a defensive end. Okay, yeah, I guess I should tap out.
Ronnie Brown.
Oh, sure. All
right. At two to Miami.
Yeah.
He's all right.
Yeah.
The Wildcat.
Yep.
Ronnie Brown.
He was great backfield at Auburn with him, Cadillac Williams, and Brandon Jacobs.
So
they had a three-headed thing going there that was just super hot.
Who might have been drafted later in this draft, too.
Yes.
But Cadillac Williams went five.
Okay.
To Tampa. And between them, Cedric Benson at four from Texas to the Bears.
That's amazing.
Three running backs in the top five. That happened in this century.
That's amazing. Yeah, Brandon Jacobs was Giants, and I don't remember if he was even in the first round.
No, he wasn't in the first round in that draft, at least. I don't know exactly.
Yeah.
I think they mentioned him last night on that show, but it was 1 a.m. What was I doing up?
Right. Watching this is what you were doing.
I loved it. I was really interested in it. And I hope there are more of those. I feel like maybe I've seen them all now, but I'd love to find a couple more. 803-0550, the Duntire Drive at 5 coming up at 5. Jeff Legwald will join us on the Broncos. Picks at 6. Mike Schoep and the Bulldog here. This is Football Friday on WGR. Welcome back, Football Friday. Get some more into Bills Broncos here through next hour. Jeff Legwald will join us from Denver. Sunday, 1 o'clock on WGR is kickoff. Now, I'll put a Bills thought in here, or a Bills game thought in here. It's time for Mike Schoep's Fresh Picks, brought to you by Umi Sushi and Seafood Buffet. Score big with Umi Sushi and Seafood Buffet, where every meal is a touchdown. I like Minnesota.
You would.
I would. Yep. I'm the only one. I like Minnesota -2.5 on Monday night in Arizona now. Sadly, that game forced out of L.A. The league offered up 52,000 tickets today to Rams and Cardinals season ticket holders, and they gave them 2 hours to claim theirs, and they all went. And so,
all right,
you know, Minnesota fans making that trip, you already had less than a week's notice if you were able to do it, because they didn't know until Sunday night where they were playing, and now you're going to have to divert here if you're going and find tickets.
I would imagine, boy, I mean, I don't know. There's a lot that I don't know here, but if you already had, but right away, right? Minnesota loses that game, so Monday morning, the first thing you do is like, let me see if I can get some tickets to go see the Vikings play in L.A. next Monday night, right? You know the schedule. You're ready to go. So you do that. The game gets moved. You must get.
Still have the tickets?
Yeah, you get tickets in Arizona, I think. I would imagine. I mean, if you can reconfigure the flights and do everything, you can still get there. So people who already have tickets that were traveling shouldn't be shut out of that. This must just be new, like, you know, there's obviously a lot more than, you know, 30,000 or so, 20,000 Vikings fans.
Hopefully the airline accommodates you.
Yeah,
on that
right,
one.
Right.
I'm playing in a good number of fantasy tournaments, and some of them are maybe you're in them yourselves, where you pick only one guy per team to fill out a roster that rides all the way through the Super Bowl. And Allen is the chalk. Jackson is second. Pat Corain at legendaryupside.com projects around 80 to 85% of the teams in the one big FFPC tournament will have one or the other. Allen and Jackson, and you're always trying to be a little bit different in these. I think Jalen Hurts makes a lot of sense in a fantasy setup here. Up to four games, great roster. He's healthy now.
Right.
5-point favorite, not 10, but still good chance to beat Green Bay. I mean, Hurts in the Super Bowl against Kansas City, 45 fantasy points.
He was incredible in that game.
You double in that particular tournament. Like, there was a big 90 next to Jalen Hurts. So I think he's being a little bit forgotten there. And in this Bills-Broncos game, Javonte Williams' longest rush, over 6.5 yards. I could see Denver's co-number one running back running for 7 yards on a play.
Sure,
that doesn't seem crazy.
That doesn't seem crazy at all, no.
Some of the Bills' props are interesting. I want to talk about Cook here for this game.
The only thing that makes it crazy is, like, if it doesn't come early and the Bills get out 14-0 or something, then, you know, Sean Payton has a reputation for not really staying with the run as it is. But if you're down 14-0 in a playoff game, Knicks may throw 50 passes.
And it's McLaughlin in that game script, probably not Javonte Williams most of the time. James Cook here, over-under, 58.5 rushing.
Hammer the over.
Really?
Yeah.
Does the number seem too low? Is that what you're saying with that noise?
Yeah. Yeah. That seems like a pretty low number.
You have this.
Again, game script wise, in my head, the Bills are ahead. So, you know, you have a 14, 20 point lead. I don't know. Maybe Cook is already sitting down if it's that game. So I don't know. But 58.5 doesn't seem like a lot to me.
Allen, 41.5 rushing yards. Over.
See, I would know. Sure. I don't know. I like Cook's number over better than Allen's, actually.
Because you see a big lead.
Right. Right. And so
it makes sense.
Is Allen going to be running, you know,
with a big lead?
With a big lead.
No.
No.
803-0550. Thoughts on Bills Broncos? Who's the key man outside of the Bills quarterback? And feelings about the team as we get to the postseason finally. Mike Schoep and the Bulldog back after this here on WGR.